This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio at the Newseum, Washington, D.C.'s newest museum devoted to journalism and to the news business. Green is very important to Robert Redford. The actor, director, activist, and philanthropist has been fighting on behalf of the environment for more than 30 years. He's produced documentary films about solar power, and he's lobbied Congress, so he's spread his message in the field and inside the Beltway, too. His most recent environmentalist project, though, may surprise some people. Youth poetry, slam poetry to be exact. He's teamed up with Youth Speaks, a presenter of spoken word performances to promote the green message in rhyme. So today we want to hear from young listeners. Are you still listening to warnings about global warming and lectures about carbon footprints? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, we'll talk with White House Press Secretary Dana Perino about her predecessor and former boss, Tony Snow. But first, Robert Redford joins us here in the Knight Studio at the Newseum, and it's nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. It's nice to be here.
And youth poetry, environmentalism, these are not necessarily things that people see going together.
Well, they are now. There are three things that really come together here for this event. One is, in terms of personal interest, one is a long history of concern and commitment for the environment, working actively for the environment. Second is the role of art in society. Third would be youth and the role that youth will be playing in our educational system and in our society at a time that I think is very critical, because this is a very critical year. Obviously, change is in the air. It's talked about a lot, but I think fundamentally a great portion of the country wants and needs change. And so where is it going to come from? And I think that the youth, this is a critical year for youth, because, and particularly these poets, this is their first year as voters, and they're, in a sense, new voters. And so I think the focus on new voters and what their priorities are, and to have those priorities expressed by young artists, is a good thing, and that's why I'm here.
Do you fear sometimes that young people aren't actually tuning in to the message, aren't necessarily going to see Al Gore movies?
Well, I don't know. There's been a lot of talk over the last decade about youth's involvement or lack of it in our social issues. I can't speak to that in terms of whether that's true or not. I think there's been a concern that there's distractions, that a lot of the young people who are smart enough to realize that maybe the system isn't giving them the benefits they deserve. Maybe they think they're smarter than a lot of the people in the system, and they become disenfranchised. They're focusing on other things. There's no draft to pull them into the war in Iraq. So whether that's true or not, them being disenfranchised or apathetic, one thing I do feel, and it's a kind of a gut instinct, and based on what I have observed at Sundance, at our festival, and in our labs out there for young people, is that since the pendulum does swing, could be very much swinging back in a very good direction, where young people are going to take a more active role in a system that is shaping their future.
Well, let's talk to one of the young people that we've brought with us here today. Lauren Whitehead is a slam poet and associate director of Youth Speaks, and she's with us here in the Knight Studio at the Newseum. Very nice of you to come in today.
Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
And tell us, for example, the subjects of slam poetry, at least so far as I understand it, poverty, violence, racism. Does the environment fit easily as an issue into that agenda?
You know, I think unfortunately the environment ties into those issues in very profound ways, and I think a lot of the youth are starting to come to know that. They're starting to see that a lot of the environmental issues happen in the poorer, darker areas of our nation. And so unfortunately they're starting to see the ties between who gets the help, who can go green and who can't go green, and they're starting to tie it into issues of race and poverty and gender and things like that. And it's quite profound to hear them talk about it, actually.
Yet some people you start talking to about melting glaciers and rising sea levels and their eyes glaze over.
They do get a little bored, I'm not going to lie. But there are things to talk about it. I know one of my coworkers does a workshop that's called God, the Devil, and the Corner Store, where she talks about how how it's a green issue that in some of the most urban parts of the nation, there are no grocery stores. There's only corner stores that sell bags of chips and, you know, candy bars, and so they can't even get a healthy snack, and their options are limited depending on where they live. You know, there's fast food, and there's, you know, there's not necessarily an organic grocery store where they can go and get the most high produce that they can find. There's not necessarily farmers markets happening in these areas. And so I think that it does tie in, and there's ways to get them to talk eloquently about the experiences that they have in terms of what that has to do with going green or not going green.
Do you get some people that would say, wait a minute, these issues aren't necessarily relevant to our lives and our neighborhoods, that we've got more important things to talk about?
Absolutely. Without question, that it's hard for folks to understand that the hole in the ozone layer has anything to do with whether or not they have books in their classrooms, whether or not they, you know, their bus system runs on time. So I think it's very hard to get folks to even care about things that don't seem like they're immediate issues. I know for myself personally, it was kind of difficult for me to write a poem about global warming because I was like, you know, I have things to deal with. I've got to talk about my black womanhood, for instance, you know? So, you know, things that seem like epic topics that are much more important in the immediate in terms of how I'm going to get a job in corporate America and things like that, you know, I'm not necessarily worried about whether or not the next tidal wave is going to come and what I can do to defend that. I sometimes feel quite powerless. But I think that's a lot of the work that we do to sort of combat this feeling of powerlessness about issues of race and gender and you know, poverty. And the environment is definitely an issue that's coming up on the same level as these other things lately.
We're talking with Lauren Whitehead, Associate Director of Youth Speak, so with us here at the museum. Also with us, Robert Redford. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And we'll begin with Mike. And Mike's calling us from Cleveland in Ohio.
Hello, Mr. Conan. I'm a first-time caller. I'm very excited.
We can tell you're a younger person because you call me Mr. Conan.
I just graduated high school near Cleveland, and all of my environmental education actually comes from an environmental studies class we had at my high school. And it was a pretty progressive high school, so the assemblies and the slideshows and the announcement they would make about, you know, recycling your cups and about hypermiling and little things like that is really where all of my green awareness comes from and most of my fear of global warming.
And did you find that your classmates, the people there with you, took this all pretty seriously, took this to heart?
Well, yeah, a lot of my friends actually take global warming incredibly seriously as like something that's legitimate and human-based. A lot of it came from just great leadership from teachers. So I think that the majority of our awareness on global warming comes from our education as opposed to, you know, sorry, Mr. Redford, media outlets.
That's okay, Mike. He'll still let you into his next movie.
There is one, yeah.
Thanks very much for the call, Mike, and next time you could just call me Neil, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thanks very much for the call. You must get that a lot. Yes, sir. I wonder, reaching people like Mike who just called, I think one thing he did say, great leadership is vital, and finding new ways to talk to people, not just in the classroom, though that was obviously important to him, through poetry, among other things.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I appreciate, I was very happy to hear him speak, and I was very happy to hear about his curriculum, because, you know, when I was a kid, there was no such thing. And certainly there was no concern for the environment because we were still living in, you know, manifest destiny. It was all for the taking. What's interesting to me in terms of leadership, I'll be pretty direct about this, we haven't had it in terms of the environment. Not only have we not had it, but it's pretty much been either ignored or undone, which is even worse. And when I think about the role of young people and how education and young people and art come together, I think about the laws that were passed in the early 70s on the environment. They came from the grassroots, and they came in lieu of leadership, lacking in leadership. And those laws are pretty powerful, the EPA and the Clean Air, Clean Water Act, and so forth, that some I was involved with. 30 years later, when the situation is more difficult, the world is smaller, and the resources have shrunk a lot more, to have leadership not only not lead us into the future, but to try to undo those laws Where is it going to come from? Where is the leadership going to come from? Well, it's going to come from the grassroots, and what voice in the grassroots is going to lead it? And I can't think of a better voice than a voice of youth. So what kind of a voice is that going to be? And then I get partial about the role of art and the voice of creativity. And so really, that's why I'm so excited to be here with this group. You know, Brave New Voices Speak Green, because it's their voice speaking out about concerns and passions they have that are going to be shaping their future when leadership did not help them.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Rachel. Rachel with us from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Hi. I'm getting a master's in art at the moment at Washington University in St. Louis, and I've really seen the impact that the visual arts as well as the verbal arts have on reaching younger people. I've been making work that has that, you know, has a commentary about, you know, the environmental impact of our actions, and this work has become a way for me to have conversations with people who are younger with me and have them be able to connect to the work. And also, because I'm getting a master's, I'm teaching, and I'm seeing more and more students come in at the age of 18 and 19, and they're also making work about these things and finding a voice and a way to really explore these issues and voice their opinions, but then also be able to kind of figure out what the solution is for them in their life.
And we just have a few seconds before we have to go to a break, Rachel, but you find that people will, you get through to people, they talk to you?
No, definitely. I think that if you make work that's accessible, that has a clear statement about, you know, this is what, you know, fuel emissions are doing, and you make this work that's visually compelling, that says something, it creates a conversation. It can't help but do that. The key is it has to be good work or good poetry. It has to be something that people can connect to for it to be successful.
We're
going
to get a chance to hear some poetry when we come back from a break. So stay tuned with us, Rachel. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Thanks so much.
And good luck with your work. We're talking about youth and the environment. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Knight Studio inside the museum in Washington, D.C. And if the applause sounds a little bit more enthusiastic than on your average Wednesday, well, Robert Redford is here in the studio with us. The Academy Award winner is talking about his new green poetry project, along with slam poet Lauren Whitehead, who's also the associate director of Youth Speaks. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Young people, does the green message resonate with you, or do you roll your eyes every time you hear the phrase parts per billion? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we have another slam poet with us here today. Simone Crew is participating in Youth Speaks Brave New Voices, 11th International Youth Poetry Slam. And today she's with us here at the Knight Studio at the museum. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
And I understand you brought a poem for us.
I did.
All right, and we've set up a microphone. She's accustomed to performing standing up, so just in front of the desks we have, for those of you in the radio audience, there's some desks in the front of the room here in the Knight Studio, and we've set up a microphone in the well in front of the audience who's here with us at the museum, and I would estimate, maybe about 100 people with us in the studio today. So anyway, let me introduce Simone Crew.
This poem's called Yasmina. I'm no one's mother. Yet to find my eyes in someone else's skull, my hands don't fit perfectly with another's. I do babysit. Between the toothbrush game, where I narrate the bristles hugging their baby teeth, and my just-so-lenient iron hand, I'm a favorite. I'm no one's mother. But when Yasmina's large brown hollows, rounded like steaming mugs of coffee, ridden in realization, I find myself afraid. She's scared there'll be no more polar bears or penguins, that her skin will be perpetually sunburnt, but I want Yasmina to see glaciers, for to travel and love mangoes, and she is one of those really, really annoying smart kids. You know, that wants to explain things to you, even when she knows that you know already. Hip jutted out and head to the side like at 8, it's already too heavy to stand upright. Who calls my name as I'm drifting to sleep on her quicksand green couch to ask me to define a word I cannot identify. There's nothing more poignant than seeing her blanket, pink cotton hovering over her globe as she plays global warming at the kitchen table. She's folding it in half. 10 years. She glances at me for approval. Folds the blanket again with an emphasis on the years, gently placing the material over the only version of the world she may ever know. 20 years, 40 years, 60, 80, 100, 110, until only one tiny point of the fabric is kissing the Earth's surface, caught and dipping into the Atlantic Ocean. Until one day, her lecture continues. There'll be no more of this ozone thingy left. Right, Simone? Her understanding of the ozone layer, the Earth's sunglasses, as I told her, is more real than many others. It really is quite sad, you know, Simone. People really, truly should recycle more. No Al Gore movie, or overenthusiastic environmental club meeting, or breaking story about new cancers in our skin, and our brains, and our breasts has ever made me as scared as seeing Yasmina telling me about how the polar bears and the penguins will have to move to New York City soon if we aren't careful. I don't have the heart to tell her that NYC might not cut it either. I'm no one's mother. But Yasmina's eyes are caffeinated, lively, and addictive. It doesn't take a mother. Her hands don't fit perfectly into mine, but we cry syncopated teardrops. Our jawbones won't match up. But she could change the world if there's still one for her to fix. You don't have to be the revolution. Glaciers break your back if you try to carry them alone. Just find a Yasmina and recycle in anticipation of their breathing. I mean, I babysit. I have never been a revolution, neither have I made one. I know not of being a Mother Earth, mountains never born unto my back, but like sinking topography, Yasmina's face sinks into a pout when bedtime arrives, and when she's fallen asleep, I fold up the pizza box, searching under the sink for the recycling bin. I'm not the revolution, but I'll heave my share of the glacier for Yasmina to feel the cold.
That was Simone Crewe, a slam poet and a participant in Brave New Voices Youth Speaks 11th International Youth Poetry Slam. And I just wanted to ask you a little bit about it. It was a brilliant idea to put that thought through the eyes of a small child.
She's a brilliant child. You know, that actually happened.
You really do babysit.
I really do babysit, and I babysit a young woman named Yasmina who decided to play global warming one day.
And where did she get the idea for playing global warming?
That's the scary thing. That's the idea at the core of this poem, to me at least, is the idea that children are learning to play global warming. And it's so around them.
Mm-hmm. And when you decided to write that poem, was it in response to, an assignment? Or was it spontaneous?
It, in fact, was spontaneous. I performed this before I knew about this green event that's being put on.
And so you had material ready.
I did.
Hey, ding, ding, ding. Let's get some more comments. There's a question here in the audience at the museum.
Aloha, my name is Mary Osorio, and I'm so glad to be here. I'm actually in Washington for Brave New Voices with the Hawaii team. And I'd just like to say, being around poets for a long time now, I've seen a lot of pieces with environmental messages. I know that they're sincere, that the poets believe this, but I really want to challenge poets and everyone else. The poetry is so powerful. People are listening. But it's more than believing in it. You've got to take action. And I see kids write really tough pieces about, you know, being true to saving the environment and not really caring about something as easy as recycling. So that's my challenge, is don't, you know, get people to listen with what you say and get people to do it by what you do.
Thanks very much for the comment. And thanks for dropping by while you were here in town. Lauren Whitehead, the Hawaii team, how is this working?
The entire slam, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
So we have invited 45 teams from across the country and even teams from as far as the UK and Trinidad and Tobago. And they participate in a week-long festival of writing workshops, and they see performances. And at the end of the festival, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, they participate in a poetry slam. You know what a poetry slam is?
I have some ideas of what a poetry slam is, but you may have a better one.
Okay, so the idea is that each poet, Each poet gets 3 minutes to recite an original piece of work. And that piece of work will be judged by 5 random judges in the audience. They'll give them a score on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being the best poem they've ever heard in their life ever, mm-hmm. 0 being somebody that should never write a poem again ever. The highest score and the lowest score are dropped, and 3 scores in the middle are added up to 30, and you get a score out of 30 points. All that is to say that each member of the team will get a chance to perform a poem. They will compete against 4 other teams, and the top 10 teams make it to semifinals, and then the top 4 teams after that make it to the finals. So from 45 we go to 10, from 10 we go to 4, and from 4 we go to 1.
And how did you decide on the theme this year of the environment?
Actually, the whole theme of the festival is not the environment. Just one portion of the festival is called the Speak Green Competition. And that portion of the festival features, out of 100 poets that applied, features 12 poets that sort of made the cut and get to read in front of people like Robert Redford and other winners.
I thought he was going to perform.
I think so, too. I think that's something that should happen.
I already have.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Lindsay. Lindsay with us from Boise in Idaho.
Hi. I guess my comment is I feel like going green is becoming kind of trendy mm-hmm. rather than taken seriously by people my age. And I guess I was wondering if this poetry slam, like I think it's a great idea. I think poetry is a great medium to try to express yourself and express how you feel. But is it going to be, you know, just something that people listen to and then don't pay attention to, or something that's, like, cool to write about but not really to do? And I don't know. I guess just, like, the trendy thing gets to me.
Yeah.
Trendy and expensive.
Trendy and expensive.
Yeah. So I think you're right. I think that's a very poignant comment, that it is kind of the cool thing to be talking about, and it's the in sort of phrase, and sustainability is the buzzword of the century, and you know everybody wants to sustain something, and I think it's rough, but I also think it's important that these kinds of words are sort of on the tips of our tongues, and that even if we're not necessarily putting them into action, I think at some moment, actually the piece that I wrote is that at some moment we're going to have no choice about whether or not we can participate in going green, is that kind of Mother Earth is going to either treat us like the dinosaurs and wipe us out, or we're going to do something to sort of, you know, repent against all the damage that we've been doing thus far. Mm-hmm. So I think that while it is trendy, I would rather it be trendy than sort of non-existent at all, because it's absolutely pertinent that at this point we start to sort of pay attention to all the things, the damage that we've already done, and sort of try to take 2 steps back.
Robert Redford?
Yeah, real quick. A couple of points brought up here that are, if I can pull them together. One is the trendy thing. I couldn't agree more. It's scary. I remember being scared when green hit a tipping point. I've been involved in the environment for about 30 years, and suddenly when you had the coming together, the congealing of Al Gore's film, you had Wall Street realizing there was money to be made by going green, and also the evidence of what had been warned for several years was now coming home to roost with people. Suddenly that created a tipping point, and then fashion, I think, scares me. Mm-hmm. And when something becomes fashionable, it's doomed. Mm-hmm. And I worried that the word green was going to start getting to the point where it was very attractive in the beginning, but it would get to that point where it'd be mocked. So the caller's right about the concern. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Mrs. Osorio said something about, well, words are, you know, words, and where's the action? Well, words are just words without action. But I think what we're seeing here today with these poets is the beginning of action. And so that's why I think this group is important, because storytelling is really the key. When you said 1 in a billion, mm-hmm. that would have glazed me over as a kid. 1 in a billion. If you tell the story in a better way, then that's going to make sense, and it's going to hit somebody hard, and then they're going to think about maybe what can I do about it. And when you show what can be done, when the poets come out and say, here's the clarion ring, now, right behind that come these groups, these environmental groups, these green groups that are saying, forget the doom and gloom, because that's not America's way. Here's what you can do about it that's exciting and productive and can lead to the sustainable future. Excuse the expression.
Well, it's said to be the word of the century. Here's an email we have from Jessica in St. Louis. I have never rolled my eyes at global warming or the phrase parts per billion. I have volunteered for several environmental organizations, yet have never even thought of using the topic in any of my poems. Slam poetry needs passion and fury and eloquence. My anger about poverty and violence does not extend to global warming. I don't think I can scream at recycling like I can racial profiling or discrimination. question. And Lauren, I suspect she's not the only one who feels that way.
I mean, I think it's true, but I also think that in some ways that there, you know, the first caller that we had talked about having an environmental awareness class in its high school, and I just, for a fact, know that there are high schools in Oakland that they don't have an environmental awareness class. They don't have anybody that's sort of trying to teach them anything about recycling. I mean, they have the recycling bins in the hallways, but all that's in there are Dorito bags and, you know, nacho cheese. And so that's kind of, you know, I think that, that there's a level of privilege that goes alongside of going green and being able to be sustainable. I mean, there's houses being built that are solar powered that rotate to get the most They get the most energy from the sun. And there's some people that are living in one-bedroom apartments with six other people. And so I think that there is, I think what's outrageous about it is that sort of you need to have money to sort of do things to be sustainable, to buy a hybrid car. I can't even buy a hybrid car, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think money is necessary, and that's sort of outrageous to me that it has to tie into race and poverty as well.
I mean, and environmental racism, you know? All of these things do connect. And to me, with the poetry, you know, slam poetry movement, my hope is that you can, you know, why people can't get angry because they're not informed about their own potential to make change. For me, and a lot of things that we will tag as being apathetic, I think is a lot of people giving up because, you know, we're not taught that recycling can make a difference and that we have a power in this revolution, because a lot of young people haven't considered it our movement, and I think part of slam poetry will be like to own it for us.
Simone Crew and Lauren Whitehead, who are slam poets and participating in Brave New Voices Youth Speaks 11th International Youth Poetry Slam. Also with us is Robert Redford. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Roxanne. Roxanne with us from Austin in Colorado.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
So I'm a grandmother, and so I'm not young. Well, I'll always be young, but I was just spending about a half hour in a movie store looking for something for the preteen set. You know, I've got five kids that I'm going to have tonight at my house. And I couldn't agree more that the storytelling is just so important for these young kids. My grandkids have just done a project where they've read books and collected money and bought water buffaloes and goats for people in Africa. And it was just such a great thing, and I'd love to see that continue. But I was just going to ask, are there any projects coming up that would make more films for young people? You know, that preteen set especially are so impressionable. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Robert Redford, anything from Sundance this year or coming up that you know of that might help
out? I can tell you about something that came from this and how I got involved with this group. About 3 years ago, we had a conference at Sundance for mayors on global warming. And the idea of bringing mayors into it was that they were closer to the ground, closer to the problems, and so forth. And therefore, they needed to be educated and be educated by each other. So anyway, in that conference of elected officials, we connected with Youth Speaks in San Francisco. And we brought, because of my involvement and interest in art and an effort to try to insert art into the political process, into social processes, we brought a couple of members of Youth Speaks over with Jamie Cass. And I watched, and we filmed it. We filmed what the poet was doing. And we would go back and forth to the audience reaction and back to the poet. And it was so powerful. And the audience, these elected officials were shook to the quick. And that led to a whole new attitude about involvement and that young people, the responsibility that older people have to a younger generation because of the voice that was raised.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that conference, to make a long story short, our role at Sundance is to use art to record what people are doing, particularly young people. So the idea of filming it became a big deal. So we decided a coalition of mayors was formed in the districts. And one group of districts in Texas was about to start to try to fight a big fast-tracking of coal-fired power plants in Texas, 49 of them, and they were going to be using polarized coal, which is the worst, most polluting. So the coalition decided to go out and try to form another coalition of lawyers and environmentalists and ranchers. And so anyway, we recorded that effort. And it turned into a film called Fighting Goliath. And that Fighting Goliath goes on to the Sundance Channel, goes into distribution.
I may not be able to find it at Blockbuster, though.
Well, look carefully.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much for all of your time. Lauren Whitehead and Simone Crew, good luck to you both in the slam competition.
Thank you.
And they're participating in Brave New Voices Youth Speaks 11th International Youth Poetry Slam. You just heard Robert Redford, who's here and says he listens every day. Does he call? Anyway, Robert Redford, thanks very much for your participation. When we come back from a short break, White House Press Secretary Dana Perino will join us to remember her mentor, Tony Snow. He died on Saturday. That's next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.